And welcome back to the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. This is Harlem, and I'm here with my guest, or not my guest, excuse me, I'm sorry, Peter, with my co-host, Peter Nicolaitis, who is, where are you at this week, Peter?
I am actually, we've got a bit of a weekend getaway. I'm actually representing the local credit union, of which I'm a director. But we're traveling to our annual meeting of all of the Vermont credit unions, and we actually got to travel about 25 minutes from home today.
Wow!
So we're in Woodstock, Vermont, staying at the nice resort here, and that's where we'll be for the next few days. So it's great. It's like I get to have the getaway in the fancy hotel without actually having to travel.
That's fantastic, fantastic. So you're on remote.
Popey would approve.
Yeah. I don't know where Popey is this week. I thought he was going to be on, but I don't see him on Skype. So
yeah, he's probably got other things too. He's probably still jet lagged from his last trip.
Probably taking some time off. But we will get him and Mike Basinger, who is from the forums, we'll get him on soon. So. In any event, it's just me and you this week. You are actually using your phone. We're not on Skype, or at least I'm on Skype, and he's on his cell phone. And we're going to give that a try this week. And so bear with us. We'll just apologize ahead of time for the sound and hope things get back to normal next week. So,
but there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got a lot of news to cover, so let's go ahead and get on that. So we'll be back in just a sec. All right, Peter, do you want to go ahead and tackle the first one? This is actually kind of your doing, and I just want to say congratulations on this for you and for the folks over at the new pigeon replacement, I suppose. So go ahead and start it off for us.
Well, you may remember that a couple episodes ago we had Justin Hayes on talking about the Fun Pigeon project, the fork of the Pigeon Instant Messenger client. And one of the things that we mentioned on the podcast was the forum post that I had put up on their site about how, you know, I said, hey, great, love the idea about the project, but, you know, the name Fun Pigeon, not so cool, don't like it. And I suggested Carrier. And on Jason's blog, he announced officially today, I keep calling him Jason. Justin, I apologize. I guess I know more Jasons than Justin. Anyway, on Justin's blog over at justin-hayes.com, he announced that Fun Pigeon is now Carrier Instant Messenger, and they've released version 2.4.2. He says, I know this is a little late, but I've been busy. Fun Pigeon is now known as Carrier Instant Messenger. This name was suggested by Peter Nicolaitis of the Fresh Ubuntu podcast, and the rest of the devs and users, we all talked about it, and we agreed that it was perfect. Still working on the final logo, but at least we have a name, and soon we'll have a new website. So, hooray! I'm happy.
Excellent, now, yeah.
A little bit of extra open source legend cred under my belt here.
That's right. You're the galactic overlord. Able to name a package with a single thought, right?
There you go. I love it.
Cool. Well, that's good. And, you know, we got a link in there. You got a link in there as well. So that's a good thing for us, a great thing for the users of Pigeon. They have now another alternative to Pigeon or instant messaging in general. We need to get them back on, which, by the way, I tweeted this. I have an idea for an upcoming episode, you know, a future episode, not necessarily the next one, but we could like cold call people who are on our Skype list, you know, and just talk to them, that kind of thing.
We could drink beers first and drunk dial them.
That would be even much more funner. But
I love you, man. You got to use the boon too, man. Otherwise, you get hacked, right?
That'll be a good podcast. But anyway, we should get Justin Hayes back on here one of these days and congratulate him and talk a little bit more about Carrier.
Sounds good.
Up next is a bit of bad news, at least for me, is that the Ubuntu Live Conference, which was scheduled to take place July 21st through the 22nd in my backyard, Portland, Oregon, it's been canceled, and they're planning to combine the two, the Ubuntu content and O'Reilly's OSCON, happening around the same time, July 21st through the 25th in Portland, Oregon. And I'm saddened by this because it would have been much easier for me to get into the Ubuntu Live conference for free than it would be to get into O'Reilly. So in any event, it's canceled. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I was a little confused and also a little concerned about this, too. You know, it seemed kind of the official response from Ubuntu or the official announcement is really short on details. Yep. And I'm hoping that it's just that somebody said, hey, you know, they've got this other conference. It's going at the same time, and it just doesn't make sense to layer them on top of each other. I'm hoping that there's no more to that and that that's all there is. But still, even if that's the case, it seemed a little bit late in the game to cancel this with, you know, like what, about less than 2 months to go, a month and a half or so before before it's, the actual event date?
Yeah. This was announced about the same time as the UDS was going, the Ubuntu Development Summit. And
right.
So, yeah, it is pretty late in the game to be announcing it. And I believe refunds are in order for those who pre-registered, but still, it was a little bit late. And I'm concerned about that, too. Was it just a lack of interest, or who knows? I couldn't speculate one way or the other, but maybe somebody from Canonical can give us a update on what's going on there.
Let's hope it's nothing serious.
Yeah, exactly. So, up next, we have Linux Mint has released a new beta. Release candidate 2 of ELISA, Linux Mint 5 is out, and that just came out, I think it was yesterday, right?
I believe so, yep.
Yeah.
Brand new.
Yep. So
that one, like we said last time, this one's based on Hardy Heron, so it's got all of the, you know, all of the Hardy Heron goodness with a nice green coating.
Yep. and you know how we just despise the brown. And
yeah.
It's, yeah. Anyway,
when you think about it, you know what? I just thought about what Mint is. Linux Mint, it's like a mint covered chocolate mint cookie.
Yeah.
You know?
There you
it's
go.
Got some chocolate inside, but it's also got, you know, green minty stuff on
mm-hmm.
it. So maybe
mm-hmm.
that's what it is.
That we'll have to ask one of the developers about that too.
What's not to love about that?
Exactly. So Mint is out. It can be downloaded at their site if you want to put it on your machines. Again, this is a beta version of Linux Mint. It's the release candidate 2. It's really for testing purposes. And go ahead and give it a shot. Try to find some bugs if you wish to. Me, myself, I'm not much of a beta tester, so to speak. I usually get a little frustrated with beta software, so I should stay away from that. You know, my blood pressure is at a safe level now. So,
well, you got to remember though, it is a release candidate. So theoretically, this would be slightly farther down the road than a beta.
True.
So,
from a true beta, you're right.
This could become Linux Mint 5.0. You never know.
Yep. But there are a number of improvements. Mint menu improvements for one thing. Looks like you can. Looks in Derina now. Hold on one second. In Derina, Mint install and the software portal made it easy to install applications. And in ELISA, Mint menu is making it easy to remove them. So it's just a simple right click uninstall to remove software. That's kind of a unique feature.
Yeah, that's pretty handy.
Yep. And if you're like me, you like to, you know, install bunches of packages at the same time. And I'd like to, call the herd on my packages in Ubuntu. So that's a decent way to do it. I still haven't tried Linux Mint. I've tried to get it running on a virtual machine. Unfortunately, I couldn't get past the setup routine. So it just quit on me. So maybe I'll try ELISA when it comes out. So we'll see. Along that note of releases, we have KDE 4.1 beta release announced. It came out March 27th. The KDE project, proud to announce the first beta release of KDE 4.1 beta 1, aimed at testers, community members, and enthusiasts in order to identify bugs and regressions. I haven't tried this yet. It looks promising. It really does. I like the way the interface looks. What your thoughts, Peter?
Yeah, I'm still holding off. I'm going to wait until the final thing is, and then I'm going to give it another shot on Ubuntu. I did, on a related note, over the weekend, I did download and try the Fedora 9 KDE Live CD, the KDE 4 edition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw
that blog post, by the way.
Yeah. I'm going to withhold commenting on it here because I think I don't want to stir up any more bad feelings between us and the Fedora community. unfortunately, though, my luck with it was not so good. But that's it. So,
yep.
Fedora, I'm sorry, I tried.
Well, we do have Fedora listeners on here, so we're going to be sensitive to all you Fedora listeners, and we just kind of thank you for listening to us.
But for the Gen 2 users, watch out.
Yeah, exactly.
kidding. Just kidding.
Oh, boy. Us and our big mouths.
All right, so what else after KDE 4.1?
We got that GNOME file manager. This is slated for GNOME release 2.2.4. The file manager Nautilus will finally get tabbed file browsing. This was originally slated for GNOME 2.2.0. Unfortunately, it didn't make it. They had a few problems. Nonetheless, it's going to be coming out in its feature tab file browsing. I don't know, one way or the other. This has no bearing to me. I don't necessarily think everything has to be tabbed, but I guess a nice feature for those who use it. I don't look for files much, so I don't know. What about you, Peter?
I see this as a pretty cool thing, and frankly, I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier. Why that wouldn't be a useful feature? Because I use tabs in my web browser all the time.
Yeah.
And I frequently have multiple file manager windows open at the same time. So I think this makes a lot of sense. I can see myself using this a lot.
I guess it's useful for the power users, but for everyday users like myself, who keep most everything in their home folder, for that matter. I guess, I don't know. And plus, there's that GNOME Do, that little Quicksilver-like application in under GNOME. That can also find, whatever you need to find, documents, or packages and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, that's good for finding them and stuff, but actually, manipulating them if you want to, if you're dragging files back and forth between windows or, moving between drives and things, I think tabs could be handy for that. What I'm wondering is, and I have not read the article yet because I just saw this one this morning, but I'm wondering if you'll be able to, drag a file and hover over a tab to have that highlight, and come to the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could actually drag it, so that you are able to drag files between tabs that way. I wonder if that feature is going to be supported.
I'm wondering myself. It's not exactly fully implemented yet. It's almost finished, but there's a couple of things that they need to work on. Maybe that's one of the things. And be interesting to find out how this is going to pan out. And again, tabs. I got tabs in my Firefox browser. And it seems to be the way to go, I guess. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see on this one. And next up, we have Firefox 3 being released. The release of the release candidate, the third one. We're in what is this? Release candidate 1?
I think this is RC1. Yeah, they're out of beta now. So
yeah. Oh, they are out of beta. Good. I'm not sure if. When was this? This was published on
the last week, but with the whole UDS and roundtable stuff, we didn't cover it.
Okay, did it make it into the repos yet?
I don't know if it's in the repositories yet or not. I want to say that it's not, but I don't know that for certain.
Yeah, I don't think I've noticed any Firefox updates in the updates I've seen in the past week. So. It might be coming up now, shortly, now that the UDS is done with. So look forward to at least for the Ubuntu Hardy users, the upgrade to come very soon once the once it makes it into the repos. And this article actually says that it will be in the repos soon. So, anyway,
that, I mean, that only makes sense too, though, because if they, you know, they started off by including a beta, then I would expect them to, you know, progress along, you know, and move along. But, you know, who knows? I don't know when the anticipated final version is due out. So, you know, they, if it's going to be like within a week or two, they may just skip right to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. We'll see. But you have a bunch of links here with these new fancy schmancy Linux boxes. The first one we have is the EEE desktop titled eBox. And that's going to be coming out in June. That's a nice looking PC there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is it's going to be the desktop version of the ePC. You can think of it that way. Mm-hmm. And you know, it will also have the Zandros, the customized version of Zandros, and not a lot of storage. It's a very similar idea. So it's a, you know, like a thin client. Think of it as a real thin client PC, and yeah, it looks pretty slick.
Well, now this eBox. Looks like they're going with a hard drive.
Oh, this one? I'm sorry, I was thinking of the next one. Sorry, oh, you're right.
Yeah, the Electronista GadgetForGeeks.com article. This one has a 160 gigabyte hard drive and has 2 gigs of RAM, which is really nice. And for a $200, $300 PC, which is going to be the price range.
Yep.
That's not a bad deal at all.
Yeah, no, that one looks really slick. That's
nice form factor. It's tiny. Looks like it's going to be a vertical mount computer. Very nice looking computer. It'll come in black and in white. Now the next one, the MySpace PC, is from Everex, and it's the. This one, it's a small, quiet, powerful $500 computer with that hip Linux-based operating system designed for MySpace users and others who appreciate the entertainment values of PCs. So, what do you think?
I love it. I every time I get a chuckle out of that. You know, this is the computer now for people who, you know, it's Linux for human beings who shop at Walmart and visit MySpace.
I'm wondering if they're trying to make a connection here, or is it a profiling kind of thing? Because profiling is illegal in the United States. You know.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know what they're going for here. It'll be interesting to see if this one takes off. And, you know, it'd be really interesting, too, to see how these are adopted and how they sell. Because remember, we talked about the GPC when they first came out and how they were selling in droves and they sold out and then a bunch of them ended up being returned. So it'll be interesting to watch and see where this goes.
Yep.
And, of course, as you noted, that, you know, the hip Linux-based operating system is, of course, based on Ubuntu.
Right. That's the hip one. So,
that's the hip one, right. Yep. Yeah, the EPC or the EE desktop, yeah, it looks cool, but it's not hip.
No, uh-uh. Well, you know, I mean, they're using a customized version of Zandros, and if it's the same one that's on their little tiny EEPC, you know, I wasn't very impressed with that interface.
Yeah. Well, most of the people that I talk to who have EPCs have taken the customized Zandros off and put Ubuntu on it, so...
Yeah.
That's no surprise.
Yeah, no surprise. I think Cafe Ninja has a little tutorial on that, doesn't he?
He might. Nightwise does, too, I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Nightwise. Yeah, they both might. I don't remember.
I think
there's
they both collaborate. Yeah. Now you have another one. You're into laptops this week, or at least new computer systems. A low-cost Linux laptop targets British schools. PC by Elinex. I think that's how you say it.
That was interesting because this one now we've got a it's similar to the EPC in form factor, but this one's going for what, $200 now?
That's right, sub $200.
I mean, they're just getting so cheap. It's amazing. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got flash storage. It's got Ethernet. And it's got an 800 by 480 resolution screen. So, you know, 7-inch display. Very similar to the Asus EPC. So, sounds pretty cool. And, you know, $200. I mean, at that point, it's like, you know, it's a throwaway thing. Try it out. You know, even if you have, you know, reservations or whatnot, you're not talking much money at all now.
No, not at all. And it's U.S. dollars, too. So, you know, euros.
Right, it's not like it's 200 pounds or something or 200
right.
euro.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that I can see, which is kind of weak to me, is the 300 megahertz ARM processor. You know, I don't know if that's going to be appealing, but it does have a detachable touch display, which apparently you can use as a touch screen, right?
Exactly. I think it acts like a mini tablet PC. So it's
cool.
It's interesting. This is, you know, the fact that it's based on the ARM processor is you know, that's something that's commonly used in handheld PCs and cell phones and things. So it's like like a big – the power just went out. Yeah, we just lost power here. Interesting. But we're on cell phone, so I can keep the call going.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's like it's a cell phone or, you know, like a tablet or a handheld pocket PC.
Yeah, PDA.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah, it's like an overgrown PDA as opposed to a micro notebook.
Right.
But, you know, that line's blurring, so this probably just underscores that.
Yep. Kind of, I've taken a look at the specs. It's got, again, a 300 megahertz processor. It has 128 megabytes of RAM and 1 gigabyte of onboard flash memory. See, the storage, you can have a removable flash device ranging from 1 gigabit to 16 gigabit. Of course, a 7-inch screen, Wi-Fi, Ethernet port, 2 USB hubs. The OnePlus model has Bluetooth, and on. Looks like it's pretty nice. The battery life is 4 hours. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think the EEE PC, is a 5 hour battery. So, the touchscreen looks kind of nice. Is it going to be running Linux? Of course, it's running Linux. I wonder how they got the touchscreen working, because I tried to get a touchscreen working on a Fujitsu Lifebook U810 and having the hardest time getting that working. Anyway, let's carry on here. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay. We have next up on our list of links is a nice little interview with, Mark Shuttleworth, with Mark Shuttleworth, The Guardian, that is a UK newspaper, interviewed Mark Shuttleworth on, and this came out on Thursday, May 22nd. Lots of good things, some insight into what's going on with Ubuntu, with Canonical, the business strategy, so many other things. Really interesting, interview with Mark, and let me highlight a couple of things about this. There was something in here about here's something. How close are you to breaking even? And Mark Shuttleworth replies, "Not close. It'll require time and ongoing investment." They position themselves for what they see as the future of software, which is unlicensed software. They are not close to breaking even, but in the future, they say they will be.
I got a kick out of that, too, because that reminded me of back at Ubuntu Open Week a few weeks back when he was in IRC, and somebody asked, "When is Canonical going to have an IPO?" And he responded, "You know, never. There's no need for one." So it's great. You know, not only they don't need an IPO, they're not even close to breaking even, but they don't need one. I tell you, man, I wish that, you know, when I a few years ago that I had made a company and made SSL certificates and stuff and sold it to VeriSign for $500 million so I could just start a company and not come close to breaking even and not care.
I wonder what it costs to run Canonical. That'd be something to ask. So anyway, it was a good interview. Lots of insight into what's going on with Canonical, with Ubuntu. He's got some thoughts about the ISO and the voting on Microsoft's OpenOffice XML standard. Lots of stuff. So if you want to gain a clearer insight into the workings of Mark Shuttleworth and his mindset and where he wants to take Canonical and Ubuntu, go check out this article from The Guardian. Pretty much it with most of the news. There's a couple of things that you and I should discuss. First of all, Cafe Ninja sent me a little link from the Ubuntu brainstorm about having Pidgin start minimized in the tray. And that seems to be gaining a lot of popularity. This one came out on May 18th and is now 169 votes. That's for people who start Pidgin. They'd like to have it start automatically at boot time and have it close and always have to close the buddy list when the system boots. Anyway, it's got 169 votes. Thank you for sending that in to us.
That seems to me to be something that really should be directed to like the Fun Pigeon or the carrier crew. I would think that, you know, that would be like a command line switch or a preference that you could just set within the application, you know?
Right. I think isn't there a way to have things start at boot up? And for instance, I can start Skype at boot up, but it'll start in the tray too.
Well, I think that whether or not something is going to start in the tray, I think that's dependent on the application. I don't know that you can start things hidden or in the tray. You know, I don't know that the operating system can make that determination for you. Mm-hmm. I think that has to come from the program, or the program has to be aware somehow that you want that to happen.
Right. And so wouldn't there be like in a preference tab or something. Once you get that set up, you can have it start up in the startup manager. I think it's what it's called in Ubuntu. You can have it start up in the startup routine, whatever you call it, and it'll start up in the tray. I don't understand. Anyway, that's something on Ubuntu Brainstorm that you can vote on. I'll put that link in the show notes too as well. But what I really want to talk about is Microsoft Office 2007 is going to support the open document format and not OpenOffice XML.
Are you sure about that?
I thought
they were already using OpenXML.
They may already. I think that's slated for a different Microsoft Office, Microsoft Office 14 or something like that. But as far as 2007 is concerned, they are going to automatically support open document format. And it looks as soon as Service Pack 2 comes out for Microsoft Office 2007, the users will have a choice to make that the default document format instead of their own proprietary format.
That would be interesting. That would be big news. And I would take that as, you know, a sign of real sincerity from Microsoft that they really mean some of these changes that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very interesting.
I agree with you. And in fact, on the bottom of the page, this was updated May 21st. It says, beginning with Office 2007 Service Pack 2, which for the first time, Microsoft acknowledged this morning will be available during the first half of 2009. So this will be available in 2009, and it will enable users to choose ODF as the default save format for spreadsheets, documents, and presentations. Remarkable.
You can choose that. Yeah, you can do that within like Word anytime now. You can choose whatever, any supported file type you can save. I mean, I think you can probably like tell it to save in WordPerfect 5.1, you know, kind of format if you've got that format support there.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't expect that to be automatically be the default. I mean, that would be a major, major change.
Right. Well, I mean, you can do that now. You can save it as an ODF format now. But this is this is making a choice to make it the default save format. So I don't know how that differs now, or I mean, you can't save that, say, a document, a Microsoft document, as an ODF format by default right now, can you? I don't use Office.
Right now, I don't think you can even save an ODF document out of Office.
Okay.
But what you're going to get is that ability. But then what you can do is you can go into your preferences and you can say, you know, save as and make your default file type. A lot of people have to do that right now. For instance, you know, the first thing I do with most of my clients, if they get like Office 2007, is we go in and we set it so that Word will save in Office 2003 format, because that's the one that everybody can read. And if you've ever gotten, you know, you get one of those docx files, that, you know, in an email, that was generated by someone, you know, who's using Office 2007. So that's a way around it. So, you know, once you've got that file support built in, you know, into the program, it's just a matter of setting a preference and say, save as this type. You know, for a number of my clients who are using OpenOffice, I do the same thing. I actually go in and I tell it to save as Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel format, just because everybody that they're corresponding with is using Microsoft formats. So, you know, because right now if you send an ODT file or something like that to most people, they don't know how to open it. And but this will change soon. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it'll change. Also, one tiny little note, it's also going to give you the ability to also save in a PDF format as an optional default. Kind of a weird thing. And it says here on the webpage, in a remarkable move that also shows how much Adobe's format has become an independent standard in its own right. So PDFs are coming into their own, so to speak, I guess. PDFs have been around for quite a bit. It's really annoying to me, anyway, that you weren't able to open a PDF file under Microsoft Word. And why did we have to have another document format to begin with? Why PDF? That was strange. And that's just an aside to me. But anyway... enough on that. Looks like we're going to have the impact about this is that we're getting more exposure and coverage for open file formats and open source formats, for that matter. So just another step closer to increased recognition for these formats and possible widespread use of them. We're coming up on to the end. You want to go through that how-to?
Yeah, one of the, I forgot who sent us this, but one of our listeners found a neat little tidbit of info on how to install the apt-cache package. And what this does is basically sets up a local apt repository on your network. So essentially what you do is if you've got, you know, more than one computer and you're updating the same packages all the time, instead of having to go out on the internet and find a server to download from, you can configure one of your boxes to be your local cache for your app repository. So any downloads or any apt Debian package updates that you download there, you can pull from, you know, basically from your local machine. So you're basically setting up your own local, you know, repository for any updates that you've downloaded. And I haven't actually done it myself, but I went through and I reviewed the tutorial. It's very straightforward, and it looks like something you can probably do in about, you know, I'm thinking maybe 10 or 15 minutes. You set up yourself a repository, you know, your local repository, you run your updates, and then, for instance, when that SSL vulnerability came out, you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, you would update your own machine, and then when you would go to update the other computers on your network, it'll just pull the updates from your local copy, and you don't have to go back and download them again. If you've got a super, you know, SCADS, you know, bandwidth, you may not care, but, you know, it reduces the traffic out on the internet, and it's good network citizenry, if you ask me. And then, of course, if you don't have SCADS of bandwidth, it's a great way to conserve it, and so you're not wasting it downloading the same file again and again.
Yep, and it does look rather straightforward. Actually, a lot of the tutorials on the Ubuntu forums are very straightforward. But prepare yourself. You'll have to use the command line. And it's basically, it's cut and paste. So if you can cut and paste and read real well, I think you'll be fine. I would say give yourself a good hour to do it instead of the...
Fine. I'm talking to the people who are, you know, really comfortable with the man page minutes. Maybe it'll take them about 15 minutes.
Okay.
But if you're not, then okay, give yourself an hour. Take your time. Enjoy the process. You'll have
exactly
fun.
And love the process at the same time. So, anyway, the last thing I want to give a little shout to is this website called Ubuntu Stats. And that's at ubuntustats.com, and it'll give you live stats from what is happening, say, like in the forums, on the launch pad, brainstorm, what's going on the planets, security news, all happening in real time. It's a little flash site, much like NetVibes would be, I guess.
Yeah, just like NetVibes, or the one that came to my mind was AllTop, the one that Guy Kawasaki is doing, which is basically NetVibes, but with tons of different categories, not just the the latest techie Web 2.0 companies.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah, it's a good place to get all the information about Ubuntu, whatever you wanted to find out, whether you're a forum. You know, you like to keep up stuff in the forums or in Brainstorm, or you like to watch the bug reports coming in and that kind of stuff. This is a good place to go. I've been using it a little bit lately for, you know, keeping up with what's going on in the Ubuntu world. But then again, I don't have to because I personally know the pulse of Ubuntu. So...
And just so you know, when you personalize it, you can add Pulse of Ubuntu as one of the streams that you track on this site. But no, they're not following me. And you know this because if you look at Pulse of Ubuntu right now, there's no entries under it.
Yeah.
Nothing going on. I'm just saying, come on, Pulse, the other but Pulse.
Let's whoever is, whoever's doing the Twitter ID Pulse of Ubuntu, I say give up your ID, donate it to Peter Nicolaitis. You can contact him at peter@freshubuntu.org. You can make a nice little exchange, and Peter can officially be the pulse of Ubuntu.
And if they were to do that, I promise that I would be Twittering about Ubuntu stuff left and right every single day, no questions.
There you go. So there it is. You know, let's give it up for Peter.
The offer has been made.
Exactly. So we just at the little black hole by the coffee shop. And we'll make sure one of the galactic overlords are there. So I suppose we should go on to our user feedback. This week it's kind of a dead week for me. I'm, you know, feeling a little blasé about podcasting today. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the time of year or whatever. But so this week we're just gonna. There's no man page minute this week, and we're just gonna go.
Haven't had enough coffee.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Yeah. So there's no man page minute. We're just gonna go straight into user feedback. Next week we'll go back into more regular programming, but. For this week, let's just go straight into user feedback. And you say you have a bunch of them, right?
Well, I've got a few. They've been piling up because we haven't done much in feedback over the last couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to see which ones we want. There was one, you know, we talked about RPM hell. And actually, it was, I think it was Davey when he was on a couple of weeks ago from the Ubuntu UK podcast. You know, just went into detail about RPM hell. And a gentleman named Vic Ricker sent us an email and said, "Hi, I have a small correction regarding your most recent show." Of course, this is, you know, a few weeks back at this point. He said, "There hasn't been an RPM hell problem for a long time. Yum has come standard, I believe, since Fedora Core 1, and it resolves dependencies automatically just like apt does." So there you go. My personal experience with Yum was I still had some problems. it's been a while now. It was a Fedora Core 2 box, and as we know, they're up to Fedora Core 9. So I didn't like Yum quite as much. It was also really, really, really slow compared to apt in my experience. But, you know, noted that Yum does resolve RPM dependencies. So thank you for that correction, Vic.
Yep. I was going to mention that when you were saying RPM hell, because I thought for sure that they had some kind of, you know, package management system by now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they've, you know, they've had it, and, you know, like I said, I even used it, but that was I'm pretty sure that was Davey, so I'm going to take a pass on that one.
Okay.
Hear that, Fedora community? That wasn't me.
That's right. We'll blame the guys on Ubuntu UK.
That's right. Send all criticisms and negative feedback to Alan. Anyway.
Us and our big mouths.
We also had an email, and I'm sorry I can't find it right now, from another gentleman who had emailed us twice. And I don't, like I said, I don't have the email in front of me right now, but his comments were to the effect of, it's amazing how well World of Warcraft runs under Wine on my RPM-based distro. So, okay, all right, fine, but, you know, to Ubuntu's defense, I know plenty of Ubuntu people who have WoW running as well. I'm just not one of them yet. I actually have
the exact email that you're talking about right here, and it's
go ahead and read it, will you?
Yeah, I will. It's from Mark Ferguson at FergieTech.com. Excuse me. It's amazing how WoW runs great on my RPM-based Fedora 8 system. I think you have more Fedora listeners than you think. I offered up to help earlier, but let's talk about how to get WoW running on your system. That was the only thing keeping me dual booted, and nowadays I'm a full Linux user using VirtualBox for interacting with legacy quote unquote Windows systems. Oh, what's your WoW location? My name is Mark Marfijokin, a night elf priest on the Blackwater Raiders realm. So, anyway, he's on my Twitter list too. He's Fergatron on my Twitter list. But, the Fedora user that you're talking about.
Yep, that was him. I play on primarily on the Feathermoon server. So, if you want to look up me or my guild, you can find it on fairweatherfiends.com. So. Enough Warcraft. Let's move on.
Okay. Here's one from Kind of a Buzz. He says, Peter, WoW, Peter, WoW runs great under Wine on my system. Several tutorials floating around. You got to get WoW running on
here. I got to get this working. Here I say, let's move. Yeah, enough Warcraft, and you go right into another Warcraft.
Here's one from you, actually, because we got a message from, where is that email about editing while drunk?
Well, let me take on, you look for that one. I'll take this other one we got from a gentleman named Pedro Lopez. He said, just one comment. The versions of the applications the distro is released with are the ones supported for the lifetime of the release. So if you want Firefox 3 to be supported in Hardy, you need to ship it now with all of its dependencies. If you ship Firefox 2 with old libraries, which other apps depend on, you'll be stuck with old apps for the whole release cycle or until all of these libraries and apps can be updated at the same time, which is also quite risky. So this was this is me again commenting. This was in regards to the comments about why did they ship Firefox 3 beta. Right. And he also says, also one tip, rename your Firefox profile directory or create a new one starting it like this, Firefox-Profile-Manager, and that's with Studley caps, with capital P, capital M. And he says, I updated from Gutsy and got a crashy Firefox until I created a new profile. Works great now. Just my 2 cents, Pedro. So I think that's a good justification for shipping Firefox beta along with the LTS release. And thanks for that email, Pedro.
Yeah, but at the same time, can't you install the Firefox 2 package?
I heard that I haven't tried it myself. One of our guys did. I forget if it was Chad Wallenberg or one of the folks that we had on our interview, I thought, or on a roundtable, I thought said they had done that. I know people have done it.
Yeah.
But
exactly. I don't understand with the. I'm assuming that they use at least some of the same package dependencies. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm just thinking why not offer both of them, you know, in the repos. You know what I mean? So
they probably do. We could find out easily enough, but
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, nice comment from Pedro, and I couldn't find that one, but basically what it came down to was there was one a couple of podcasts ago, I think, I had messed something up during post. And got some weird audio in there. I guess it was skipping or something like that. And I did listen to it, and it was entirely my fault. I take the blame for it. And he thought that we were...
Yeah, that was the one who asked if you were drunk while you were editing, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And so you sent me a podcast. You sent me an email saying, please do not edit the podcast when drunk or high anymore. Please, K, thanks, bye. Just in my defense... You know, I chalk it up to the technical aspect of the computer. I think what it is that let me see the beta version of Audacity, which I use for editing, has a difficult time handling any WAV file over an hour and 5 minutes. So I'm just gonna chalk it up to that, and we'll just drop it from there. So anyway. Okay, no more drinking and editing at the same time.
Exactly.
One from Terry, known as I Am Var on Twitter. He says, still enjoying the show. Thank you for doing it, and thank you very much for sending that. It was a direct message from Twitter, which, by the way, you can follow us both on Twitter. I am at twitter.com/Harlem, H-A-R-L-E-M. And Peter is at twitter.com/Nikolaidis. That's N-I-K-O-L-A-I-D-I-S. So you can follow us there. You got anything else?
I do. I have one more email, and the wireless here in the hotel is just starting to cut out a little bit. But okay, got it. We have a gentleman. Now, I'm not going to include his name right now, and you'll find out why in a minute. But basically... email says, I'm writing to plead with those with the capability to program. I bought a Zune before I installed Ubuntu, and now the only thing that keeps me running Windows is the Zune. Ubuntu does everything I need better than XP, but the way Microsoft made the Zune work, it feels more like I'm licensing it as opposed to owning it. The thing is, I absolutely love the interface the Zune uses, so I'm asking for anyone with the capability to help me get Ubuntu to recognize the Zune and its contents or write some firmware for it that works like the original but designed for Linux use. Thanks in advance. And Chris, I'll sign off there, you know, include his first name. I emailed back and I said, I'll be happy to put the word out on the next regular episode. And then I said, but... A Zune? I got to ask, what were you thinking? And he said, I was thinking, it's not an iPod.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I understand the whole, lesser of two evils thing, but I don't know, man. If I was trying to get away from Apple, I don't think Microsoft's the direction I would be moving in.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so if anybody knows if it's possible to connect a Zune, I don't own a Zune. I have no clue whether it's possible to use a Zune with Ubuntu or not. But if you have a way to do that, send us a note, drop us a line, Harlem said, and let us know, and we'll spread the word.
Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, you can use the Zune with Ubuntu. I believe it's... my older laptop is running Gutsy, so it brings up Rhythmbox when I plug my daughter's Zune into it. So it does work. I'm not sure exactly how well it works, but she doesn't use the Ubuntu machine to fill up her Zune. So, you know, I think by default it just recognizes the device and then brings up whatever package that is compatible with it. So I think that's so RhythmBox.
It just like reads it, but it can't like download to the Zune, you mean?
Yeah, maybe? I think so. I don't know how it works under Ubuntu, but I do know that it does recognize the device, and then at which point it will bring up a package, which is RhythmBox. And as far as communicating with each other or downloading or uploading, I have no idea because we don't use it for that. So
right. All right. So if anyone can help, let us know, and we'll spread the word.
Exactly. So, yeah, I would have went creative or something like that, I suppose. But, you know, the lure of Apple is very compelling. So, anyway, I think that's all I've got. We'll save the voicemail for next week because I got a voicemail from Randy. We'll just save that for next week. And that's it for me. You got anything else?
I'm good, man. I'm done.
All right. Well, we're going to stop this right now. And thank you very much all for joining us. I got one last thing, I guess, is that you can email us at harlem@freshubuntu.org, or you can email Peter at peter@freshubuntu.org. Go ahead and visit our site. It is at freshubuntu.org, of course. And we also have a contact form there where you can also get a hold of us there.
And I get those emails now. Yay!
Yes, he gets those emails now. And let's see, what else? I think that's going to do it for this week. We're sorry for the change in regularly scheduled programming. We'll go back to more regular programming next week when we talk again. So anyway, goodbye from me. And Peter, goodbye from you, I suppose.
Indeed.
And enjoy your weekend too. And we'll see you again next week. Thank you very much
for
joining.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.